The next matter on our calendar for oral argument this morning is Cusick, also or now known as Beigler versus Cusick. As counsel are approaching and getting situated, I will remind you of our rule. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel for rebuttal. The timing restrictions are indicated in the light and the clock in the lectern, so you should be mindful of it and stop when the red light comes on. If you haven't already stopped, you may raise and lower the platform at your convenience to match your height. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument because we keep track of the proceedings in our audio recording of the hearing. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you may. And I don't mean to rush you. If you're getting situated, you can relax. And we won't start the clock until you're ready and proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Francis Herbert White III. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Sergeant Mark Cusick. With me at council table is Mr. Brian Lewis. Your Honors, approximately 20 years ago, in the 2000 Rose Bowl, wide receiver David Terrell walked up to his bloodied and battered quarterback and said, "You're getting beaten up because our offensive line leaks like a sieve." That quarterback, Thomas Edward Brady Jr., said to Mr. Terrell, "Just do your job." And that's why we're here today, because the magistrate, the child support magistrate, in this case, did not do her job. Her job was to apply the correct statutes to the request for modification and to apply the law appropriately. She did neither. To begin with, the child support magistrate decided to apply MnStat 51829 to the request for modification. As this court is well aware, the state legislature has designated that the appropriate statute under which to evaluate a request for a modification of child support is MnStat 518839. The respondent in this case has stated that error of citation, which is more than just an error of citation, is harmless. The respondent is mistaken. Yes, Your Honor.
With regard to the applicability of 518.39, obviously it applies to this situation, but your argument relates specifically to overtime pay, is that correct?
Overtime is related to the inapplicability of the wrong statute, that is correct.
Okay, and assuming it was the court erred by citing 0.29 rather than 0.39, is the appropriate remedy to remand, or is that harmless error because the stipulation and decree provides that your client was earning overtime from LifeLink at the time that the existing support order was entered. And under 0.39, that overtime is not excluded if the overtime, unless the overtime began after the entry of the existing support order. And it doesn't seem like there's any factual dispute in that regard here that it pre-existed the existing support order.
Your Honor, the overtime did, but there was changes of circumstances. And by relying on the specific language that is in A29, I'll abbreviate it that way in order to make this a little more fluid. In order to apply that, she went back and analyzed the fact that he had been receiving overtime according to deed for the previous 2 years. So the child support magistrate took one element of A529 out of what she did, and one element of A39, because she cited to it earlier, but to her, it's not just the citation that is wrong, Your Honor. It is the analysis.
And how is it wrong in that the district court found that respondents overtime did not begin after the motion to modify after the motion to modify child support. And in order for it to be excluded under 3.9, it would have had to begin after the motion to modify, or after the entry of the existing support order.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, in the analysis of that, by relying on the other factors, she did not give credit or take any notice in her analysis to the language that was provided by Mr. Kuzik's employer, that the overtime was not guaranteed and that it was actually subject to being changed.
But it doesn't matter if it's not guaranteed unless it began before the entry of the existing support order. In other words, it's only excluded if a variety of factors are met, and if one isn't met, it can't be excluded. And one that has to be met is that it has to begin after entry of the existing support order, but the finding of fact was that it began before entry of the existing support order.
It began at the petition, not at the existing support order. It's not a...
It began before the existing support order.
That is correct, Your Honor. But it is not a harmless error. It's not a distinction with a difference. At the time that the existing petition was entered, Sergeant Kuzik was on duty with the Army Reserve, and he was receiving military pay. In the interim, he retired. I believe that is in the record, and it's in the order. And at that point in time, he began to receive VA disability compensation. That was duly reported to the petitioner, in this case the respondent, that was being received. The child support magistrate erred when she included the totality of his VA disability compensation payments in the child support order. And by doing so, the consequence of that is his modified income with his reduced overtime pay and his lack of Army Reserve pay was greater than was necessary by 1%, or $1, I should say, than would allow for the modification of the child support order. Let me clarify this statement for you, Your Honors. The state of Minnesota has designated in 518A29 what is to be considered in the calculation of gross income. And if I may read from that, Your Honor, among other things it says, quote, military and naval retirement, pension and disability payments, and then later on it says Social Security or veterans benefits provided for a joint child under Section 51831. Section 51831 defines that as the amount of monthly Social Security benefits or apportioned veterans benefits provided for a joint child shall be included in the gross income of the parent on whose eligibility the benefits are based. The reason that this is relevant is that it is the job of the court to give effect to all of the language that is in a statute. It is not the job of a court, a child support magistrate, or any other court to read into the statute that which they think should be there. I'll give you, I will explain.
Counselor, how did that happen, and why are the veterans' disability payments not within the prior clause of disability? I mean, that's what it is, right?
No, Your Honor, it isn't. It's not a pension and disability payment. I'd like to refer the court.
So isn't this really a new argument you're making right now? I don't recall you citing 518A.31 in your brief.
No, we cited 518.29, which refers to
correct.
Five.
But I don't recall you making this specific argument in your brief, and I've read your brief a number of times.
Yes, Your Honor. We're going to 51831 in order to define what is meant in 51829.
Okay. But do you agree that you didn't make this specific argument in your brief?
I would agree that we did not raise the definition in our brief, Your Honor. Okay.
Thank you.
I would refer the court to the linguistic canon, the statutory canon of ejusdem generis, which states, when general words follow an enumeration of two or more things, they apply only to persons or things of the same general kind or class specifically mentioned. Social Security and veterans benefits are specifically referred to in 518A29 and specifically stated what they are. They're also not carried under the umbrella of pension and disability payments. Pension and
these disability payments that he's receiving?
No, Your Honor, they're not. It's disability compensation. I understand that colloquially.
What's the difference?
The difference, Your Honor, is that disability compensation received from the Department of Veterans Affairs is controlled by Title 38 of the U.S. Code. The U.S. Code, these benefits are paid specifically to veterans in order to compensate them for their loss, their earning potential being diminished as a result of service-connected disabilities. I myself am a service-connected disabled veteran. My earning ability is being compensated by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Sergeant Kusick is a service-connected disabled veteran. A disability pension or disability payment or pension is something that can be awarded by the U.S. Department of Defense under Title 10, not under Title 38. The difference between the two is instructive because Title 38 comes with a significant number of protections that prohibit.
But our law doesn't specify that disability payments are those limited to those awarded under Title 10, correct?
I would argue, Your Honor, that it does. And for the very linguistic.
I would like to turn for a minute to the arguments you made in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
Specifically,
which ones?
On page 6 of your brief, reference 42 U.S.C. Section 659 and argue that that language displays Congress's clear intent to displace any state law in counting VA disability compensation as income for child support obligations. Can you explain what specific language in that statute you believe supports your argument that Congress has displayed clear intent to displace any state law in counting VA disability compensation as income for child support obligations?
Yes, Your Honor. Sergeant Kuzik is in what is called the gray area. Gray area is an area that when an individual has been retired from a reserve element, such as the National Guard or a reserve component, such as the Army Reserve, as Sergeant Kuzik is retired, they are not entitled to draw on their military retirement until they reach a certain age. Generally, that age is 59, but in this case, that can be diminished by the amount of time that he's spent deployed. Because he is not waiving any of his military retirement pay, Congress, in drafting 42 U.S.C. 659 H1A2V, excuse me, 5, stated that you cannot take that pay, you cannot apportion or assign that pay anywhere else. In other words, the provisions of USC.
And what exact language are you referring to?
Your Honor, it states. I see I'm out of time.
You may answer the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. By the Secretary of Affairs, as compensation for service-connected disability paid by the Secretary to a former member of the Armed Forces who is in receipt of retired or retainer pay, if the former member has waived a portion of the retired or retainer pay in order to receive such compensation. Because he is in the gray area, Your Honor.
How does that evidence any intent with regard to child support?
It's evidence in the intent that you are not allowed to implement the apportionment provisions of 5301 or 5307 of Title 38.
That's the clearest?
That is the clearest, yes, Your Honor.
Yes. One quick
question. Yes.
Didn't the Supreme Court reach a contrary conclusion in Rose v. Rose? Didn't the Supreme Court address this exact language?
In a way, they did, Your Honor. However, as the court is well aware, Rose v. Rose has since been tempered by the latest decision, the 2017 decision from Howell.
Okay, well, we can discuss that more in rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, Your Honor, Your Honors. Caitlin O'Rourke on behalf of Tabitha Beegler, formerly known as Tabitha Cusick. I'm going to start with the overtime issue as appellant kind of began there.
Can you start with waiver, just so I'm clear on what, if any, arguments you believe were not presented, but were argued today or presented for the first time in briefing?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that Judge Cochran indicated that there were a couple of issues. Specifically, in the brief, he did indicate that there was some language under U.S. 38C that would affect this, and there was some argument about the Mr. Cusick's status, but he didn't provide any specific language at any point in his brief. And then the additional arguments that Judge Cochran were discussing today were not raised in his brief.
And so what's your position on those?
I would ask that the court disregard those arguments.
Thank you. And by the way, were you notified before oral argument today that those would be presented?
No, Your Honor, I was not.
Thank you.
Thank you for that inquiry. In regards to the overtime income, the child support magistrate's decision should be affirmed. It was a well-thought-out decision. It did, in fact, include a typo. The conclusions of law paragraph often kind of auto-populated when a child support magistrate does their orders does refer to 529A instead of 529A.39. The big difference between these two statutes, as the court knows, is the time period prescribed that you're supposed to look at. And I think the JKL case decided by the Court of Appeals is really helpful to in our case here. In that case, the judge looked at and used the wrong time frame, which resulted in a higher child support obligation. In this case, the magistrate here did the proper analysis in her order, finding that there had been no change. I think the language that she uses is very clear that she's indicating, look, there's been no change since your marriage, since before your marriage, there's no change. That was her point. And she used that language in a number of different ways to get it across. But the analysis that she provided was correct. And because the analysis was correct, so the difference between the JKL case is that the court in that case misapplied the requirements of the statute. It wasn't just a typo. They misapplied the statute and the time frame, which is the most important thing and really the biggest difference between 518A29 and 518A39. So the error here is just, it's a typographical error. It doesn't change the court's analysis. There's a number of paragraphs where she looks at...
It's an error, though.
Yes, Your Honor, of course. It would have been... Yes, I absolutely think the court did not mean to... identify 518A29A there. On the first page of her order, she does designate that the issues before her are under 518A39. That was what I had put on the record. That was our discussion at the hearing, and questions were regarding that. So it was absolutely a typo, and of course, would be better if that order had been perfect. But it doesn't change the findings and the analysis that she applied to this case.
Would it be more appropriate for this court to remand back to the district court to correct the error and make any additional findings, or are her findings sufficient to support the determination to keep child support the same?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the order is absolutely sufficient because she laid out the factors in 518A39. And if the court were to remand this, it would not change the results of the overtime income. There's no question about that. It really is a typographical error. And that's the big difference between the JKL case, which resulted in a change in a child support obligation. This would not result in any change except for a typographical error in the conclusions of law section for this order. Ideally, that's not perfect. But the analysis, again, is quite clear. And I think that both the magistrate and at the hearing and, again, in her order was indicating, look, there's been no change with regard to this issue. In the order, she indicates a number of paragraphs where she's looking at the overtime income. At one point, she looks at the year-to-date for 2018.
She does mention 2 years, though, which is really a factor under 0.29, not 0.39.
Your Honor, oops, I apologize. You're absolutely correct. She does, in fact, indicate that a two-year average there. It is quite common that we use averages when we're looking at bonuses, overtime income, things like that. So I didn't read that to in any way indicate that Mr. Cusick was, or that she was using 529A. It's very common we look at averages. And in fact, at the hearing, it would have been to my client's benefit for child support purposes if we had used just his 2018 overtime hours because they were greater. It possibly would have resulted in enough change that maybe child support actually would have been modified to over $1,000. So the court used a longer time period that really actually benefited the argument that the overtime income was more minimal than my client was claiming based on the year-to-date and the information provided. So I agree with you that but that's just one of, she does indicate there's a two-year period. It's quite common when we're averaging overtime, bonuses, additional compensation that fluctuates, that we look at a period of time. And that doesn't by any means preclude the language where she says, look, you haven't done anything since this motion. One paragraph, she looks at 2018. She's clearly looking at a number of factors to figure out, like, I don't believe there's been a change based on the language and the stipulated judgment decree that was, like, hard fought and thought out by counsel and the court in that matter.
And the parties agreed at that time that he had overtime pay from LifeLink.
That is correct, Your Honor. He absolutely, that was
so very... So this overtime pay isn't something that began after the original order was issued?
No, that's correct, Your Honor. It absolutely was existing during the party's marriage. He often worked LifeLink, which included overtime hours, and then if he wasn't deployed, then he was working at LifeLink. So, yes, it was very common during the marriage that he would work at LifeLink and that he was often working overtime, which, again, picking up extra shift could potentially be voluntary. Being required to stay because there's an emergency is not voluntary, which is why, in the first place, we were able to have that language in the judgment and decree, setting us up to provide that baseline moving forward for ongoing overtime hours that he was presumed to work. So I would ask the court, again, the child support magistrate here is, there is a typo. It is a harmless error. It should not be remanded. Remanding it will not result in any change to the child support obligation at all, because the proper analysis is provided. And again, I know Judge Cochran indicated that you have to meet a number of factors for the overtime income, and he didn't even meet the first one based on the language in the decree and the information provided by counsel that day. So I'd like to turn to the disability issue. That is... That is, I think, quite clear. I know counsel is argued the Mattson case and is quite versed, and also a service member himself. So he's quite versed, I think, in the some of this case law and the statutes in a way that perhaps as a family law practitioner I am not. But the statute that I rely on is 518A.29, which I think specifically in response to an argument he made about whether or not disability VA compensation or disability payments, you know, as we colloquially refer to them, are included. 529A is intended to be inclusive. It says, subject to the exclusion and deductions in this section, gross income includes any form of periodic payment to an individual, including but not limited to, and then it lists all of the, you know, 15 to 25 things in this statute. The point of the income statute is to get at whatever people are presently receiving now, to help them and to ensure that they're supporting their children. The child support obligation is really about what's best for the children, and this statute is intended to get at all of that. And really, it's not intended to in any way limit a party because something isn't listed here. And clearly the Rose case, you know, back from 87, indicates that the purpose of VA disability benefits is to support a family and their a veteran and his family, his dependents, his children. In that case is a perfect example in the Rose case where a party was, their only income was the child support or the VA disability payments they were getting, and a court found them in contempt of court because they weren't using whatever income they had available, which happened to be this, to support their children and fulfill their obligation. So this payment is absolutely, pursuant to the statute, required to be in our calculations for a party's income for child support purposes. And there is no case law, there is no statute, there is no federal law anywhere that prohibits both the child support magistrate or this court from following the Minnesota state statute that requires that we include that income. So
did
I would...
Did the Supreme Court's decision in Howell affect that analysis in any way?
That's a great question. Thank you, Your Honor. No, I understand, you know, the appellant made that argument in its brief that to some extent there was a request that this court extend Howell. The way I see Howell, really kind of the big picture view is Howell saying, look, there's this portion of the retirement pay that is unknown. It's not a guarantee, and so we want to limit people having access to it or people making decisions about it, us dividing it. It is completely separate. It is completely separate than a person's obligation to pay support, which the act has made clear, and Rose v. Rose made clear. When we are determining child support, we're again looking at what people have presently in this moment. What do you have available to you to support your children? What is coming into you on a regular basis or any source of income? And if it's not regular, like overtime, let's look at why it might be included to support your children. This is a tax-free payment that the appellant receives. He also receives an increase in it based on his dependents, which the child support's to pay for. This is absolutely a requirement for the court to look at that payment and to use that payment. Howell in no way indicates that. And I think, obviously,
you don't dispute that military disability benefits are not marital property subject to division.
That is correct, Your Honor. I in no way dispute the Howell or the Mattson case.
So is it consistent with Congress's intent to conclude that military disability benefits are properly considered income for child support purposes, yet those benefits are not marital property subject to division?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that is absolutely consistent with what Congress's intent was, and that's been reiterated again and again in the case law here. Congress absolutely specifically intended to separate those two, and there's a huge difference in designation because of someone's obligation to support themselves and their family, and because the disability payments are to support the veteran and their family, as opposed to dividing up this asset for retirement purposes. Those are two entirely separate obligations in a dissolution process. So yes, they are completely separate, and the courts have continued to indicate that that is intentional. That separation is not intentional, or that is an intentional separation, which is why the Howell case in no way changes the statute we have here, whether or not we should read into the federal law preempting it. The Howell case, again, is really just fine-tuning the information we know and the act regarding the division of these assets in the marital in the dissolution process. It's fine-tuning that to further clarify that there's these additional issues where there's this pre-waiver, post-waiver. Like, it's just fine-tuning things as we go down the process to figure out, just like the Mattson case, which fine-tuned, look, you can't even a stipulated decree where the party agrees to allow a person to have a portion of this, you can't. So those cases are further fine-tuning that whole separate idea, notion, and rule that is absolutely not in any way consistent or with the child support cases or the Act's request and response, the Act's language to provide the payments to support a veteran and the family, and then obviously the statute here that controls. So I would ask that the court affirm the child support magistrate's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Francis Herbert White III. With me at council table is Mr. Brian Lewis. To begin with, Your Honor, I would like to say that military disability benefits have not been affected by the Howell decision at all. The Howell decision dealt solely with disability compensation from the Veterans Department, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. This is a problem that frequently confronts people when they address these issues. And because they're not using the correct nomenclature, they often conflate the two. Unfortunately, that has been conflated in this case. The difference that is found in 518A29 regarding the language, again, falls victim to another one linguistic canon, generalia specialibus non derogant, which says if there is a conflict between a specific provision and a general provision, the specific provision prevails. There is a provision in 518A29 that discusses veterans' benefits, and it states that it is the benefits that are paid to the child. When an individual fills out a child support guidelines worksheet, there is a field in that worksheet in order for you to put in those figures. Therefore, the state court has addressed this in order to affect the federal principle. There is a difference between Rose and Howell. I admit that there is a difference between Rose and Howell, and there is a difference between Rose in this case. And Rose, as counsel for the respondent has indicated, that was the only income the parties had. That's not the case here. The parties are, while I would not say that they were affluent, they are much better off than they were in Rose.
Explain why that matters.
It matters because in Rose, the Supreme Court was analyzing a specific set of circumstances that said all of this income needs to be counted in order to care for the individual's family. That's not the case here. So even if by a policy, and going by a policy doctrine, it isn't necessary to do that, and the court should give effect to this, to the clear statutory limitations in A529.
But, Counselor, in Rose, if that was his sole source of income, you'd think that even more strongly than in this case, that it would not be appropriate, yet the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, came to the opposite conclusion. Here, there's more than one source for child support that the father is receiving. So how does that distinction help your case? It would seem to have the opposite effect.
To the contrary, Your Honor. In that, the court was looking out for the children, and in that regard, the children are still considered to be a part of the family by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and by Congress, who appropriates money for them. I believe the language that was used in Rose referenced a paltry sum. That was the case there. That isn't the case here.
The court in Rose also said that Congress clearly intended veterans' disability benefits to be used in part for the support of veterans' dependents.
That is correct, Your Honor. They did.
The court didn't limit that to situations where that was the only income available to the veteran.
And then 30 years later, the court handed down in Howell an admonition that state courts should not find clever ways in order to try to get past the prohibition to find a method to disperse this money in ways that Congress did not intend.
Didn't Howell deal with division of property between the spouses as opposed to child support?
Howell dealt with that on its face, Your Honor. But the statement that was made in Howell, admonishing state courts from doing what I just described, is much more broadly applicable. Respondent is asking this court to substitute its own judgment for the fact finder. That's not the role of this court. And in conclusion, waiver only applies if the issue is not reasonably raised by the brief. And I believe that everything that we stated here was reasonably raised by our brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today and in writing. Matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you. We are running slightly ahead of time on our oral calendar for today. The next case on our calendar is in regard